Join the Toronto Holocaust Museum and its partners for a community-wide Yom HaShoah commemoration on Sunday, May 5th. A moving evening of film, candlelighting, music, and a tribute to survivors we've recently lost. Keynote speaker Yoni Berus from Yad Vashem will reflect on Holocaust remembrance post-October 7th. The program is at Beth Emeth Synagogue at 7 p.m. Register at torontoholocaustmuseum.org.
It was still hard because we were shooting in Poland and we were actually shooting on the border of Ukraine. So we felt the ramifications of the war even offset. We had soldiers at our hotel and refugees.
Hello, bonjour, shalom, and welcome to Culturally Jewish. I'm David Sklar.
And I'm Ilana Zakon.
On this week's episode, we chat with actress Sophie Nelis on her upcoming film, Irina's Vow.
Mama always wanted me to be a doctor, but I became an artist and that really shocked her. Now I'm interviewing people in the biz, pros and newish, but all of them are artists and they're culturally Jewish.
So David, did you watch the movie? That's my first question.
Honestly, I did not watch the movie.
Okay, why not?
Okay, so here's my thing. I don't enjoy watching Holocaust films.
Does anyone enjoy? Well, actually, you know what? A lot of people probably do, and they're probably not Jewish, but continue.
It's quite possible. Did you watch the movie?
I did not. I was planning on it, though, but once I realized that I was unlikely to end up being able to join you in the interview, which is what ended up being the case, mm-hmm. I decided to work on my auditions instead. I did watch the trailer, though, and it looked very promising, so I guess we'll have to outsource and find out if the movie was good from someone else. But I want to keep unpacking this.
Yeah.
Do you have survivors in your family?
So if you had asked me that when I was 20, I would have said, no, actually, I don't. Funny story, not even funny story, but I was in Israel. I was there for 6 months and I had met for the first time my relatives that my grandmother's cousins who live in Haifa. And we were talking and they sort of casually brought up the fact that, yes, we had survivors. We had family that was killed in the Holocaust. And I had no idea. My grandmother, my bubby, never brought this up at all. And it was only when I was 27 did I learn, yes, I had not direct family members, but second and third cousins mm-hmm. that had survived the Holocaust.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I don't have any direct either, but it was like my great-grandmother's siblings, like people like that. But I also, I didn't even do March of the Living. I don't know if you did, right, David?
No, I did Birthright. That was it. Yeah.
There you go. So this is really interesting because I feel like it's rare to meet other people that didn't do the march. And at the time, I had just done a 5-week Israel trip the summer before called Darut, doesn't exist anymore.
Okay.
And I didn't, in my mind, I was like, oh, it's like 1 week in Poland, 1 week in Israel. I just went to Israel. And I don't know if I had the words to articulate it, but I think looking back, and I still feel this way, I don't think I was emotionally ready or maybe I'll never be ready. And I don't even have that direct line. I didn't grow up hearing those stories, but it's really traumatizing. Like just the idea of putting myself into that situation. And then when you look at movies, it's pretty much, I mean, a much more minor version of going to visit actual concentration camps. But like, why would I subject myself to relive something that deeply affected our people, even if I don't have grandparents that survived? You know?
Yeah. No, see, I remember being in grade one where we talked, no one understood exactly what was being talked about in school, but I just remember the phrase to remember and never to forget. And I just remember being terrified. I can't remember what exactly the teacher said, but I do remember as a 6-year-old, 7-year-old waking up and having nightmares that the Nazis were coming to my house and they were rounding up my family. And there was a lot of Holocaust books, even for young kids at the time in Solomon Schechter.
Said Hannah's Suitcase, that
like,
kind of thing.
Exactly. And I was like, no, it scared me. I always shied away from it. Obviously, I watched Schindler's List, but I
actually haven't seen Schindler's List.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah, I haven't seen it.
Maybe you and I need to get together at some point and sit down and
watch Holocaust movies.
Watch a Holocaust movie and review them because they're, you know, like there's the classics, right, that you sort of need to watch or should watch. Even I remember Europa was a very famous one about a Jew who pretended to be a German Nazi and survived the Holocaust that way. But wow. I cannot do it anymore, right? I feel numb to the process. It's not that I'm going to feel too emotional. It's that I'll feel nothing watching a movie these days.
I mean, we definitely watch Holocaust movies when I was in school, but I feel like I had the opposite experience, that I was very desensitized to pretty much anything around like Holocaust or pogroms. Like, we learned about it in such a clinical way that I felt like it wasn't even real. It was like reading a book. And then I remember it was when I was in theater school and I visited Yad Vashem with my family. And that was the first time, because I was thinking so much in theater school about like having empathy and, you know, these are real people that you're portraying and try to make them three-dimensional. So I was looking at these stories written by children in the Holocaust, and I was so moved, because all of a sudden it hit me that this actually happened. That was in like 2012. Right. I was not young anymore. And I feel like since then, and especially as I've been getting older and I had the privilege of living with a survivor in my first month in Toronto, who was my great grandmother's cousin, and hearing his stories, he actually just turned 100 2 weeks ago.
Wow, mazel tov.
You know, that really, really affected me, hearing his stories firsthand. Because I remember when we were younger with this same relative, my mom brought us to Toronto and she's like, okay, Jack's going to tell you his story. And I could not tell you a word that he said. I don't think any of it processed. It took me time to actually catch up. You know, it's a lot. It's a lot to take in.
Absolutely. It is a lot. And they talk about intergenerational trauma, that sometimes we just can't process these things and we're still dealing with them.
Yeah.
But in any event, this particular movie, Irina's Vow, I'll just give you a synopsis of what it's about. It's based on the story of Irina Gut-Opteich, who, when she was 19 years old, she's promoted to the housekeeper of this home of a very highly respected Nazi officer. She finds out at the same time that the Jewish ghetto by the house is about to be liquidated, and then, determined to help 12 Jewish workers, she decides to shelter them in the safest place she can possibly think of, the basement of the German commandant's house. Let's take a listen to the trailer of Irina's Vow, and then we'll hear the interview I did with Sophie Nélise. Sophie Nélise is a Quebecois actress, and she starred in some major movies. Alana, do you know more about that?
Yeah, she's in the TV show Yellow Jackets, which I haven't seen, but everyone I know is crazy about it. And she was also in another Holocaust film, The Book Thief, when she was younger, and she's done a whole bunch of other stuff. You can look her up.
All right, let's take a listen.
You will be in charge of supervising the Jews. Your survival will depend on that.
I have until July 22nd to make sure that this entire sector is Jew-free.
We have no place to go.
I saw a place where I can hide you, where no one would ever think of looking for you.
Hi, Sophie. Thanks for joining us today.
Hi, thank you for having me.
So Irina's Vow is based on a play, which is also based on the true story of Irina Gut-Opteich. Can you tell us a bit about her?
Yeah, well, Irina was a young Polish woman who was only 19 and who served as a servant in the house of one of the highest ranking German officers. And during her time there, she managed to save the lives of 12 Jewish people by hiding them in the cellar.
Okay, now this is not the first time you've actually starred in a Holocaust film, right? You've played in the film adaptation of The Book Thief, which was also about a non-Jew saving Jews in Nazi Germany. I think that was over 10 years ago. Can you describe what working on Irina's Vow was like for you compared to your previous film?
Well, I think when I was doing The Book Thief, I was quite young and it was the beginning of my career and I didn't really take acting seriously to begin with. Like, for me, it was just fun. It was like going to day camp and I was like, oh, cool. And let me do a bit of research. And obviously coming into this, I had done all of the research prior with the Book Thief, having watched all of the important, most influential Holocaust movies like Schindler's List and The Boy in the Striped Pajamas and all of those. But I think that now that I've 10 to almost 14 years later, that I've grown into someone that is a little more aware of the impact that I can have with my work, and that feels more of a sense of responsibility. And that's just more culturally aware. I was just really happy to take on this role, because beyond it being a second Holocaust movie, it felt like it was still very relevant to what's going on today in our society. And I felt like it was a very important message to tell.
How do you mean by that, in terms of relevant to our society?
Well, I think in terms of there's still ongoing wars and we seem to not be able to learn from our mistakes, and there's still genocides going on everywhere. And I think Irina is a good example of learning from, for her, there are no differences, and or if they are, they're not relevant and it's not important. And I think in our society, we're so quick to judge each other based on our differences or different political ideas or religions or values. And it's as cliche as it is, I think those differences are what makes us beautiful as a society. It's what makes us all unique and different. And I think we should try to learn from them instead of creating conflict with them. And I think Irina is proof of that.
Now, I know, I believe this was a pretty short shoot. It lasted about a month long in terms from start to finish. How did you sort of prepare for that process? Because as you said, this is a very heavy movie. What kind of things do you have to do as an actor to sort of prep for this on a very short time frame?
Yeah, we didn't have a lot of prep time. We didn't have a lot of rehearsals, but I tried to do on my own as much research as possible. I read Irina's, like you mentioned earlier, there's a book about her life. I spoke to Dan Gordon, who wrote the script, who knew Irina personally. I managed to find photos of her in her 20s and archives of her later in her life doing interviews. And what really struck me was how full of life and how much she still smiled and seemed happy despite everything that she'd been through. And then I obviously worked with a dialect coach to have them learn how to do the Polish accent.
Mm. Now, the writer you mentioned, Dan Gordon, he is Israeli-American. Beyond the conversations, did he have any role in sort of table reads or during the shoot at all? Was he there to sort of give a maybe more of a Jewish lens to the story?
He was there at the beginning. He came for a few days. I think there's so many people involved in this project that I think we tried on set to keep it as minimal as possible because, I mean, we had different producers and, yeah, just a lot of people involved and too much is like not enough sometimes.
So then in terms of the challenges, like did you face while working on this on this material? I'm just curious, how did you keep yourself sane or mentally healthy while working on this film, knowing that it is based on real life events?
Yeah, well, having my mom around helps a lot. She, I asked her to come with me for this shoot in particular, knowing we'd be in Poland for a while. And we would just try to talk about anything aside from work on weekends or when we get home. And she just knows me so well. So it's just nice to have someone that's like my emotional punching bag in a way. And it's just there to support me and just to... Yeah, we would just do anything like walks and coffees or shopping on the weekend that didn't require to be in that environment. But it was still hard because we were shooting in Poland and we were actually shooting on the border of Ukraine. So we felt the ramifications of the war even offset. We had soldiers at our hotel and refugees. And so it was very hard to let that behind me.
Now, I was going to ask you about what it was like being on location in Poland. Now, you mentioned a bit earlier that you were right on the border with Ukraine and you saw these soldiers, you saw these refugees streaming across the border. How did that personally affect you as you were sort of filming this movie about genocide and sort of seeing what's happening vis-a-vis in real life? Did that inform any of your work going into the actual project?
Yeah, well, I think it for us was another reason why it was a constant reminder of why we had to do this movie and the importance of sharing her story. And then also it was just so easy to get into character because, I mean, it's heartbreaking to see it on the news and to be surrounded by it and shooting in Poland and to see these buildings that were used back then that are there, the real buildings that stood then. And so the sets just felt so real, having the swastikas up and the armory and the guns around and the costumes, like these are real fabrics that come from back then. And so it was so easy for me to step into her shoes and think what she must have felt like.
And looking back on your experience, were there any aspects of the film or even your performance that you are most proud of?
I think I'm proud of the fact that what we've accomplished with the little budget we had. We weren't working with a lot and we had scenes like the scenes in the public square with the shootings and war scenes that you know, would take days to shoot if we were on a bigger production, and we had to do it in 4 hours, which is unheard of. So yeah, I think it's how realistic this movie looks and the imagery behind it and what we've made out of the 29 shoot days that we had, to me is mind blowing.
Okay. Now the film is directed by a French Canadian, share name Louise Archambault. And I know you're not the director, but I'm wondering if you can give us any insights into why she would be interested in telling this particular story.
Louise. Wow, that's a good question. I'm definitely not in her mind, but knowing Louise, she is one of the most generous, kind, nurturing. She was like my second mom, and she, like Irina, has this, always wants to help others, and she's so compassionate and so calm. And so I think she felt very connected to Irina and how spirited and resilient and strong she was. And again, like me, I think she wants our world to be a better place. And I think that she felt a responsibility with this movie that to make our world a better place somehow, even if it's this much, even if this movie affects 10 people, these 10 people will then affect other people. And I think that's what she tried to do. And
So I did a little snooping. I went onto your Instagram account while you were promoting this film, and I saw there was already some backlash, such as one commentator who wrote, and I'll quote it, "This movie is just another Jewish pity party, just in time for the war crimes they commit in Palestine, Schindler List 2," end quote. How do you deal with comments like that?
I don't read them. It's kind of almost as simple as that. I think if you believe the good, like, it's impossible to please everyone. Everyone is opinionated. Everyone has their different opinions. Again, I tend to see that if someone would leave a comment like that, they have unresolved issues in their lives, and it stems from a place of they have darker, bigger issues to deal with in their personal lives. And I try to just be compassionate and think that, you know, if they want to give off such hatred, it's because they're not happy with their own person. And so I either don't read them or try to not be affected by them, because I just see someone that needs help.
I mean, this being a very Jewish podcast, culturally Jewish, sort of we've sort of seen or felt the backlash as Jewish artists ourselves. I'm an actor. This is kind of the world that we're living in post October 7th. And I'm just curious how one tells a very Jewish story in this current political climate and how you navigate it.
Like you said, it is very hard for me to take a stance. And like you said, as being in the public eye, I think we're very scrutinized with all of our, again, political beliefs or any stance or opinion that we take. Again, I try to find the elements in the script or in any work that I do that appeal. I think everything you do can somehow touch someone. And I think, like I mentioned earlier, this movie is relevant because it goes beyond our political climate. I think she is she's an example of who we should be as human beings. And I think that anyone can relate with Irina's story. And I think that for me is what's more important.
Okay. And finally, did you learn anything about the Holocaust?
Her story, I didn't know of to begin with. And I think it just opened my eyes to how many people helped that were more in the shadows. I think we talk about like the Schindler's List of this world, but there's so many people that made a difference and that had an impact that were silent helpers. Like I take in, for example, in this movie, you know, the other servant who knew about the Jews that were in hiding and that still decided to remain silent. And so I think he's a good example of all these people that made a difference that we, you know, don't recognize their help necessarily, that there are thousands of people out there that we will never hear their stories.
Sophie Nellies, merci beaucoup.
Thank you. Thank you.
All right. So Going to our listing section, I'm first going to shout out an event called Cultural Canvas, Jewish and Chinese Perspectives. It's a unique showcase that aims to celebrate the rich tapestry of Jewish and Chinese cultures through contemporary art. And they are actually looking for artists. So if you are an artist and you have a piece, you can submit online up until April 20th. We can pop the link in the show notes. And this is going to be taking place in Vaughan on May 1st in Ontario. David, what's going on?
I'm glad you had to clarify that Vaughan is like, still in Ontario.
People outside of Ontario are going to be like, what's Vaughan?
So last night I just started watching Testament, the Story of Moses. It's on Netflix right now. And if you're tired of rewatching every Passover, Charlton Heston's Ten Commandments on TV, this is a new docudrama that sort of reexamines Moses's life as a prince, as a prophet, with lots of insights from theologians, Christian, Jewish, as well as Muslim, and historians. So if you want a new angle, check it out. It's 3 episodes long.
Speaking of films, this is also in Toronto at Hot Docs. You can check out Ari's Theme, playing April 30th and May 2nd at the TIFF Lightbox Theater. It is about Ari Kanarthi, who grew up with type 2 spinal muscular atrophy. And now at 31, he's a hugely accomplished music composer living with his condition that continues to weaken his muscles, but it's making him, you know, go after his dream and create music. This is going to be a beautiful, beautiful documentary. So be sure to catch that at Hot Docs. David, anything else on your end?
Yes, sticking in the theme of movies, on April 28th at the JCC here in Calgary, they're holding an event called Movies and Matzah. It is for families. You get to wear your coziest pajamas for an enchanting afternoon where they'll screen The Prince of Egypt with delightful... Of course, a classic. Delightful Pesach-approved snacks. It's fun for the whole family, and it's in partnership with PJ Library. So if you have kids, head on down to the JCC that day.
And on theme with today's episode, Irina's Vow is being released in select theaters on April 19th across the country. So be sure to check that out. It sounds like David and I will not be checking that out, as you know, our take on Holocaust films. But if you love Holocaust films, or if you feel connected to them, it does look quite good, I have to say. It looks good. If I was going to watch a Holocaust movie, that might be one that I would watch. Yeah.
It would be this one. This would be the top pick for Holocaust films for this year.
David, what are your plans for Pesach?
I will, first night, I'll be getting together with some friends to do an in-house Passover Seder. And then the second night, I will be going to Temple B'nai Tikva, where they're going to hold an event there, catered by Grumman's. And Alana, I don't think you know how big Grumman's is here in Calgary. It is like the Schwartz's of Calgary.
Really?
Yeah. So I'm very excited to taste their brisket.
Cool.
And
I'm
going
to be heading to Toronto this year, spend some time with my in-laws.
Nice.
So that is what I'm going to be up to. I am looking forward. I actually really love Passover. It's my favorite holiday. So it should be fun. And this is going to be my first time having a Seder with a kid at it in a very long time. And that's probably going to change soon because my brother's about to have a baby as well.
Oh,
so kids will now become part of Passover again for the first time in a long time.
So were you always the youngest child to ask the 4 questions?
No, I'm the eldest. I rarely ever had to do it. I'm the eldest of all the grandchildren and in my family.
Okay, because I have always had to ask the 4 questions, even as like a mid-30-year-old man, it's still me.
Well, I hope you have fun with that.
Same to you. I hope you enjoy Toronto.
Chag Sameach, everyone, and we'll see you next month.
Culturally Jewish is hosted by me, David Sklar, and
Ilana Zakon.
We're produced and edited by Michael Freeman, and our theme music is by Sarah Siegel-Lazar. We're a member of the CJN Podcast Network. To support our work and everything the CJN does, visit the cjn.ca/donate to make a monthly donation and receive a charitable tax receipt.
Thanks so much for listening, and see you next time.